Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let me bang you,
I
man.
Do let you bang.
Hey, let me bang you, man.
I let you bang.
Let me bang you.
I let you bang.
Greetings, nerds and virgins.
Go for Jesus. No, forget Jesus, people.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for your favorite mixed martial arts podcast. Recording out of Los Angeles, California, it's MMA Roasted with Adam Hunter.
Who the fuck is that guy?
What's up, people? Welcome to a better MMA Roasted podcast. Me, Adam Hunter, here with Greg Wilson, who you look like you just got back from Vegas. Like
I did just get back from Vegas.
You look like you partied in Vegas.
I had a pretty good time, man. There was one night where I was pretty sure I was gonna die, and not from like doing anything too bad. I just ate some late night chicken,
and
then in the middle of the night, I'm like, "Oh God, I don't feel so good," and I like just got up and I had to walk around the casino trying to walk it off for a little bit, you know. And then I finally felt a little better, and then I went back to my room. So it was fucking, you know, it's intense and it's a long week, you know. And I still, despite my better judgment, I still go pretty hard. So,
of course,
you know, it happens.
It was crazy. I had like, I was in town and I did the Haha Friday, which was like awesome. I reckon I hosted it and it was like just a fun, like, you know, you're having a good set when people are like, "What's your Instagram?" while you're on stage and people want to know.
Yeah, like, don't care. You're crushing when that happens. Fuck yeah.
But I got kind of annoyed at some of the comics because a couple guys, you know, first of all, I hate when I ask somebody, "Hey, how do you want me to bring you up?" "Oh, just, I don't care. Pick anything." Cause now it's my job to like create your credits, you know. And by the fourth guy, if you say this guy is great, he kills all over town, or he just clubs, you know, it's like, just give me something, you know, like something, right?
See, I'm the opposite. I don't want your fucking credits. I'll just give you a very funny guy. Here he is. That's it. Very funny lady. Everybody get, you know why? Because the audience doesn't care. They don't believe it anymore anyway.
But just give me what, just, but didn't tell me to say funny guy. But just now I'm like having to mix it up for everybody because it was like, see, but that wasn't even why I got annoyed. This guy goes up there and it's a Friday night show and people paid. Like, it's one thing if it's an open mic or you're working stuff out or it's a Tuesday.
Oh, God.
And over there.
Yep, yep.
And this comic literally tells the crowd, "Look, there aren't that many people here, so I'm just going to work stuff out." So he tells the crowd this. Then he sits on the stool and whips out his notebook. And
that's the worst.
So I'm like, "Oh, who is this? This guy must be, have a billion followers. This guy must be somebody." No, it was like, he had like 1,000 followers on Instagram. He was following 2,000. It was somebody that I've never, and the guy wasn't even a half bad comic. He was doing fine. It was a good crowd. But I'm just like, man, like if I paid $30 to come and to bought two drinks and I'm ready to see a show. And then I sit there and this fucking guy comes on and goes, "Oh," and treats it like I'm like it's on his, you know, focus room. I'm like, come on, man. You know, it bothered me as a host, as a comic, as an artist. It's annoying.
You know, I have a similar problem when I'm in Vegas because the Vegas clubs, not all of them, but some of them tend to use the local comics for hosts, which is fine. You know, they can handle that job. They're good for 5 to 7 minutes. That's totally fine. Very good. But the problem is to them, you know, this is their local club. You know, there's a local club. But I'm like, to the audience, this is a Vegas show.
Yeah.
So I need you to dress like it's a Vegas show.
Right.
They show up in fucking, you know, old ass t-shirts and shit. And I'm like, I'm looking at the fucking, you know, the manager. I'm like, can you tell them to dress like this is a real show? Like, these people, to them, they came from out of town. They bought tickets to the club. They expect a Vegas show. And these guys are showing up like they just came from the fucking gym. And I'm like, I know you live here, but this is a destination for everyone in the crowd. Yeah. Fucking act like it. I hate the way the local comics dress like they don't fucking care. And it's like, and then they wonder why they don't get booked. And it's like, because you don't treat it like a real show.
Yeah. Now this dude, I was like, I couldn't believe it. He goes, there aren't that many people here. So, and even a comic that I knew that was good, a good comic that you know too, went up there and he's like, oh, I'm not gonna do anything that works. I'm just gonna do shit that like a workout. I'm like, how do you expect people to come back? You know, why would I come back if I was sitting there?
That is really just completely unprofessional. And I hate it when people do that, especially on the weekends.
Yeah.
You do that, you want to do that, do it on fucking Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday through Saturday. You gotta bring the A game. That's what people expect, and that's what you gotta do.
So we're talking about these comics. I did a show Friday and I was hosting a show. Like, you know, one of the better comedy clubs, you know, my favorite comedy club in LA, to be honest. Haha. And these comics go up there and they're like, oh, no one here. And there was like 30 people there, whatever. And these guys, like, I'm just gonna work shit out. Takes out his notebook, sits on the stool, and just reads it. And I'm like, motherfucker, like, you know how many people would love this fucking spot? You know how many people would fucking be like, oh, this, I'm here on a Friday night? Fuck yeah. I'm just like, come on, man. But on the flip side, the improv Saturday night, I closed the show on the Saturday night show. And that was a where I'm like, that, and then the Laugh Factory Sunday were two gigs where I'm like, all these fucking shit gigs that I do, this makes it easy. Fucking sold out shows, ready to laugh, couldn't wait to hear jokes. I was just so fucking happy. Although Ron G, who I love, is a good friend, he's like, yo, before I go on, it's someone's birthday, right? So I think they're gonna wish him a happy birthday. No, he brings up someone from the crowd who sings happy birthday. Of course, it's an all black show. So it's fucking like Aretha Franklin's up there. And then they go, they're like, people are twerking. They're like, it's your birthday. And they're playing the fucking Two Live Crew version, right? So by the time I go on, there's a fucking music festival just happened, right? So I just said that. I go, you think it's easy to do a comedy? I'm the only white comic here. And then they got fucking, you know, Jennifer Hudson singing happy birthday with on fucking Soul Train. I just shit on the whole thing. And people were like, laying on the fucking ground. So that was cool. And I got to meet Arsenio Hall. I did a show with Arsenio Hall on Thursday at the Comedy Magic Club. And I asked him, because my TikTok is like all 80s wrestling. It's like, I actually like TikTok.
Actually.
So Arsenio,
yeah, it's like, of course, why wouldn't it be?
So Arsenio used to have the Ultimate Warrior on and Macho Man, but they'd all be in character. They wouldn't like break character. So the Ultimate Warrior would come off the interview and just trash the whole fucking set. And then like, be like, oh, Hulk Hogan, but you know, or like Macho Man would be. So it was, and I asked him, I'm like, dude, what? He goes, well, I was competing against Johnny Carson. I knew Johnny wouldn't have him on. He's not going to have, you know, Rick Rude on and Jake the Snake. So that was my thing. So that was cool. He was so nice, Arsenio, and so like appreciative. That like I asked him about the time when you ever see when the gay rights activists confronted his show in the middle of his show?
Was Buffer even announcing then?
Oh boy.
No.
No,
hey, by the way, real quick, before you say this, is my audio okay? I'm using a microphone. I don't know if it's good, bad, or worse.
No, it sounds okay? Pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, let me try something else.
Yeah, it sounds like you're underwater.
So this was what happened. I don't want to play the whole 5 minutes, but let's see if I can find it. You guys can see it, right?
Yeah.
Is it any better, by the way, my audio?
That is better.
So Arsenio, this is back in the 80s, you know, when Arsenio, people don't realize how big Arsenio was. And for some reason.
Remember the dog pound?
Yeah.
That was the, no, it's his posse. Give it up for my posse.
Yeah.
So this happened during his show. Hold on.
The blonde girl was so funny while they were singing. She said, oh my God. It was so funny. So funny. Huh? I'm sorry. I can't hear you, man.
Why don't you have any gay guys on your show?
Any gay guests on my show? Wait, I'm sorry. Why don't I have any gay guests on my show? Well, there are a lot of gay guests who really don't like to talk about their sexual preference, so we don't know whether they're gay or not.
This is during the monologue.
Well, he goes right after him too.
You run from this, did you? This ain't Johnny. I ain't gonna run from it. I'm gonna deal with it.
Nice. Queer Nation, it says.
I didn't realize Johnny Carson was such a coward.
shows that's gay that maybe I haven't had. Who?
I don't know. Cruz.
But I know Elton John. He's been here. He's rocked the house. Okay? Okay? What? When Harvey has something I'm interested in, I'll bring him on the show. But this is my show, okay? This is my show. This is my show. This is my show. This is my show, man.
Wait, whose show is it?
I think it's his show.
Seems like that's the point he's trying.
What's wrong with you, man? I'm black. Man.
There's the race card. There it is.
Black, man.
The Trump card.
What do you know about? I don't want to hear that gay trash, man. I got gay friends I've had on the show. Because you don't know them, or it ain't who you want on the show, you got a problem with it. If you want to book it, get yourself a show.
Woo! Must be midnight at the comedy club tonight.
Had mine.
I love it.
So yeah, I.
He was like, "Get yourself your own show." He's like, "I don't know Rogan. I can't. I can't get on his show 300 times so I can have a podcast." That was a Schaub joke, by the way.
I got it. Okay. So, but yeah, so I asked him about that, and he was like, basically, he was saying like. He had a lot of people that were gay on his show. He just didn't ask if they were gay. It was, you know,
right. And back then, most of them weren't just out, you know, yeah, a lot of them kept that very private. You know, this was the 90s. It wasn't like it is now where it's an advantage almost, or I wouldn't say it's an advantage, but people aren't like, oh my God, we can't use him anymore. He's, you know, he came out of the closet. But back then it was a big, big deal. And so a lot of them just didn't discuss it publicly, you know, and here they are wanting to, I love it, Harvey. Why don't you have Harvey fired? Like he's specifically avoiding Harvey Firestein, you know, like oh my God.
I'm just curious what Greg Fry would say about how it used to be in the 90s versus now with gay guests.
Back then, people knew they were on a scene. You know what I mean? You like your meat and potatoes? You eat them in a closet like everybody else.
Oh my God! So we're by the way, speaking of which, we have a guest coming on tonight. His name is Will Pounder. He's a porn star who's also like a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So he'll be on.
Is that his actual name?
Yeah, that's his porn name.
Yeah, that's his birth name. And at that point, they were like, you know what? You might as well go. Yeah, yeah.
It's like when Dakota Cochran. I found out that was his actual name. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not his state.
So Will Pounder is coming on the show today. And then so is the guy who's Ashley Gambino and Trap Gambino. You know them?
They sound like they're part of the Gambino family.
Yeah. I was going to say, you mean the criminals?
No. So Trap Gambino is like this 500-pound guy who's like a rapper who had tried doing MMA, but he's always getting everyone mad at him, like on the underground. He went on Dr. Phil, and Dr. Phil told him there's no chance of him being a fighter, but he trains, but he has some work to do.
Okay. Dr. Phil giving fight advice is like Joe Rogan giving vaccination advice. Like, come on, guys, stay in your fucking lane.
So his wife, Ashley Gambino, used to fight people on Fremont Street for money, but I guess while she was pregnant. Anyway, so Trap Gambino has all these people mad at him because he's kind of a troll.
Remember, you're fighting for two.
But they just...
Greg would be like, no, it doesn't count. She doesn't have an advantage. That's not a person.
Unfortunately, I mean, they've always been supporters of mine. Every time I get them on the show... Every time I get him on the show, I get tons of hate mail saying, why are you giving these people a platform? Fuck you. I hate your show now. Because but he's always, anyway, they lost a kid recently, a young kid. They reached out. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to say no, obviously. And they're friends. But every time I do have him on the show before that, I would get just people shitting on me. But cause they're always fighting people on the underground. But he does Trap does troll a lot of people. Like he tells everyone he's, I guess he had one fight in Florida and he does jiu-jitsu tournaments, but and he's also, I don't know, he has a cult now. Very interesting people. So they're coming on the show. The last time they came on the show, Ashley Gambino got into a fight with Jenny Savage and they started fighting with each other. And it became,
it sounds like it's going to be a very upbeat conversation. what are you talking like? Okay, so we have these guests today. Nobody likes them. It hurts the show. They just went through a tragedy. But don't forget, it's all about the comedy here on MMA Roast. Like, what the fuck are we doing?
Dr. Phil's giving Adam booking advice now.
Totally, exactly.
Like, no matter how flat you make a pancake, it's still not a waffle.
So I don't know.
You want ratings? You gotta get guests that nobody likes.
Dude, you gotta see Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil told them. Yeah. Meanwhile, I posted the clip of me on MTV from years ago. You see that clip, Jay, of when I was Fred Durst when I was Limp Bizkit?
I saw it.
Yeah.
You know what happened there? You know the whole story about that? So I'm on stage at a comedy club. This is like in 2001, maybe 2000. I'm like a year into comedy. And this girl came up to me and she's like, I'm a casting director. She's kind of cute. Do you want to play a part where you're Limp Bizkit? You auditioned for it. I'm like, yeah. So I thought it was like a TV movie of the week or something. Or like, so I'm like, I'm going to play Fred Durst. This is my first acting role. I was so excited, right? So I go up there. They take me to like this salon that was like Warren Dracomi, which is a big salon back in the day. They gave me all these fake tattoos, all this shit. I get there. They're like, there's a fucking someone that looks like Ricky Martin, Lil Kim, and Christina Aguilera. They're like, you're on a show called Face Biters, where you love these celebrities, right? So they interview me. They're like, why do you want to be Limp Bizkit? I go, well, because I was at a comedy club, and they told me. They're like, no. And the producer, you're a huge diehard fan of Limp Bizkit, and you want to look like Fred. I go, no, I don't. I was at a comedy. They're like, no. So then the producer comes out. Oh, you're going to be difficult? You're going to be difficult now. And I'm like, so then –
they have so a, who do you think you are, Trap Gambino?
So then I'm like, okay, I'll fucking play along. So I'm like, I love Limp Bizkit. They're my favorite. I tried to do it in the most obnoxious, exaggerated way possible that anyone that knew me would know. So they're like, okay, you just perform as Limp Bizkit. I go, okay, right. So then they have rounds. I'm like, what are these rounds? They're like, well, the first round is how much you actually look like the person, right? And the other people look exactly like these people, right? So I go out there and they're giving me like, well, your hair doesn't really look like them and you don't have, so they give me like fives and fourth. Now I'm in fucking last place on this tournament contest I didn't even know I signed up for, right? I did not want to be, so I'm fucking fuming backstage, right? I'm like, fuck this shit. I'm so fucking mad, humiliated, but I'm like, all right. So then it was the performance round. So I go out there and I just fucking kill it. Like I was so angry in real life. And I was going to just trash the set and moon, but then they kept giving me tens, right? They're like, you worked it out. So then I started like humping the fucking stool and this and that. So that was kind of cool. But
they're like, now you're Joe Rogan? Oh, no. No, the best was that I heard that they told Adam, I always hear these rumors, I heard they told Adam, like, who do you think you are when he didn't want to go along? He goes, apparently Fred Durst. So apparently I now think I am.
So yeah, that was Face Biters. That was the show. I posted it. It's on my Instagram and YouTube and shit. But
you know, you were talking about the underground earlier. You guys know I thought I invented trolling when the internet came out. Like I really thought I was the first one to ever come up with that idea. So I got on the underground and I started it out like with a topic like, does anyone know what the deal is with Muhammad Ali? And then I put on there like, I don't know what his deal. It seems like he's just not as well spoken anymore. Like he's not as like, I don't know what's going on. And people are like 0 out of 10 was like the first response. And I didn't know what that meant. Like I had no idea what that meant. 0 out of 10. I said, no, for real. Like what's going on? I said, it's almost like he had like head trauma or something. They're like, dude, no one's buying it. Like they, and I really thought I was going to like, I thought they would all just think I was an idiot, you know, but they didn't buy it. This is under a fake screen name. Obviously they found out I was a real idiot under my real name later. But yeah, I thought I invented trolling. I was like, man, I can't believe nobody bought that. And I realized it was a thing that everyone does. Like I thought I would be the first one to try to irritate people online. So stupid.
Well, then you have
one time I got cast in a big campaign. I won't name the client, but it was for a very large online platform. And I get the campaign, and it's ads are going to be in travel destinations all over the place, airports, billboards, all this. And my agent is like, yeah, because they want you to do the commercial, and you're going to actually get to do the photo shoot the next day. They're paying you to stay to do the still shoot for all the, you know, for the billboards and the signs and everything. I'm like, great, that's awesome. He goes, and thank God you're not one of my other guys. They wanted him to wear a thong. And I'm like, oh, thank God, you know, blah, you know, whatever. So then we shoot the commercial one day, that goes fine. Then we get to the photo shoot the next day, and they're like, all right, Greg, here's your thong. And I'm like, I never agreed to the thing. Like, I'm not a thong guy. And they're like, it's going to be hilarious. It'll be so funny. I'm like, again, I never agreed to the thong. Like, and I got my agent on the phone. I'm like, what the fuck? They think I'm the thong guy. He goes, oh, I guess they switched it. I'm like, what? I'm like, you tell them right now I'm not doing the thong shit. You know, and then they're like, fine, what if we gave you a flesh-colored bikini brief? And I'm like, okay, fine, give me the flesh-colored bikini brief. So that's what they ended up giving me, and I'm shooting with that. And then, thank God, COVID hit, and the whole thing fell apart.
Oh, man, I would have loved to. That would have been hilarious, dude.
I'll tell you how many people have said, thank God COVID hit this week.
Exactly. And, listen, let me tell you, all I'm thinking was every comedian I know is going to see me in this fucking song at the airport, fucking.
That would have been great. You would have loved it.
I was working on a joke that it wasn't his agent; it was his travel agent. But I got nothing. I was trying to. He said it's going to be airports, billboards. I'm like, this your travel agent that signed this up, but I got nothing.
So we'll should have shot it out there. That would have worked. I like that.
So we'll talk about the fights, and then I got a funny story about Guantanamo Bay. But all right, so
there's nothing funnier than Guantanamo Bay in my experience.
Not today. I was happy for COVID. Great stories about Guantanamo Bay. Like, we're really working in a rare place of irony today.
All right, Leon Edwards. I did not see this happening. I thought Usman was going to wrestle fuck him the whole time. I think he decided to do that round three on. But the first two, he got into a kickboxing match with a guy who's a better kickboxer than him. It was weird. But he was holding the gloves. He did hold the cage, which I think if you hold the cage and take away a point, they should start with Usman on top. Like, I don't know why they started neutral after that, because I don't know if it would have been that big of a difference, but if you're preventing the takedown, they should start with one guy on top who would have gotten the takedown.
I think taking a point away is a much bigger deal than giving him position.
Both.
I think it's a one or the other situation. If you're going to take a point away, you know, okay, there you go. Situation resolved. I don't know, but maybe you should do both. But I thought Usman looked totally different than he looked in every other fight, and not in a good way. Like, he was chasing him. He looked like a tryhard. He looked like a guy who was like trying to prove himself the first day. It was so weird. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? He just kept pushing so hard. And Leo was able to sit back and just bop, bop, bop. And okay, you would think he'd spent all this time defending that rear left kick that was the one that knocked him out in the last thing. And it was open all fucking day. Everything on Leon Edwards' left side, the left jab, left hook, rear left kick was just killing him, and he never changed a fucking thing. Usman straight up lost that fight back.
Sean?
I'll tell you what, the whole thing was kind of ruined for me, man, when he said afterward that Colby doesn't deserve a title shot. He hasn't fought in 2 years. I was like, actually, he fought 11 months ago, number one, or whatever it was. Number two, who deserves a shot? You're not going to fight Usman again. You're not going to fight Chimaev, even though he's not going to do that. You don't want to fight Colby Covington. He already beat Bilal Muhammad. So what are we going down to, number 12, 13? Like, who are we getting? But it's so funny to hear him say that he's not fighting him next, and Dana White said he is fighting him. I have a feeling I know who's winning that argument. I'm not positive. But I have a feeling I know there's going to be an interim title with Colby and somebody else. And then he'll just be out. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to – that kind of ruined it for me, because it just shows he's afraid – not afraid of Colby, but he doesn't want to fight Colby. He's probably tired of fighting wrestlers. He wants to fight Masvidal, which who wouldn't? Fight somebody ranked 13th that'll stand up with him, you know? So
yeah, he's like, there's no story there. I mean, look, I think obviously the UFC would like to have Colby as the champ because he sells tickets. He's controversial. I mean,
right.
You know, and I think Leon Edwards.
What's Colby's ranking, though? Who's number two? I mean, who's
Colby's one now? Because
It really should be Colby, but at the same time, according to Ariel Helwani, it shouldn't be. I mean, Bilal Muhammad has a right to say that, but they're putting Bilal against what's his name, which is like going to be the hardest fight. They're putting Bilal against the guy that just beat you know what I'm talking about, Bilal Muhammad, the guy that just beat. The guy just beat Jeff Neal. He's got some kind of crazy name. Oh yeah, Shavrat Rachmanov. The guy's
Put him in there, dude. That guy's a killer. I personally am not eager to see Colby just because the math doesn't add up. Colby lost to Usman twice in a row, and now, you know, and he beat Usman twice in a row. So why would I don't care about the Colby fight either.
But like Sean said, he already beat Bilal Muhammad. Chimaev missed weight by 9 pounds his last fight. So you kind of
Chimaev is a better fight. I'd rather see him fight. I have to agree. I'm not interested to see him fight Colby.
Come on.
I just think, you know, it's
I want to see if Colby can do, because Colby's going to go. I mean, Colby's going to have a much stronger pace than Usman. He's just going to go 100%. I mean, he doesn't have the wear and tear that Usman, I guess, has now. And it's going to be the buildup's going to be hilarious. He's already talking all
Colby will beat him and he'll finish him. I think Colby, Usman's, I don't want to say done because I hate when people do that. But that Usman that fought the other night was not the same Usman I've seen the last 10 fights.
Thank you. It was so weird watching him chase him around the ring. Like, I've never seen him chase another fighter like that. Like, it was just so weird. Like, he was a tryhard. He was, listen, as a lifelong tryhard, it's embarrassing to watch somebody else do it.
Takes one to no one.
Exactly. That's all I kept thinking was, oh my God, he's being such a tryhard right now. Like, stop it, dude. Stop it.
But I feel like he lost the first two rounds. He won the third round. He also got rocked. I think him getting rocked, I didn't, you know, with that like knee, like his legs buckled.
Well, because he kept chasing him. And also, again, his entire right side of his body was just open for business all fucking night.
But once he started wrestling, he started winning the fight. But he just
didn't. No, he didn't.
He waited to round three to do it, which was also,
you know, well, that was the only round he won. He lost the first two and he lost the last two. It wasn't even close.
They called it a draw.
He lost by 2 points on two different judges' cards, and I agreed with it. No. I totally agree with him. Like, he didn't win those rounds. I'm sorry.
Either lost or it was a draw, because if they would have called it a draw, a lot of people were saying draw. A lot of people.
No way. Not even close.
I think with you got to remember the point taken away too makes a huge difference. I would like to see half points taken. I know that sounds stupid, but if you have I think every growing strike should be a half point, no, intentional or not. These warnings do you no good. Grabbing the fence, half point, whether it was intentional or not. You know, I mean, you get a foul in basketball when someone hits you, whether they meant to or not. But you could call it more liberally than, like, you might have a guy lose a point and a half over the, like, John Jones poking you in the eye. Whether you meant to or not, you lose a half a point. That way, the warning means nothing. If I can start every fight by poking in the eye, kicking in the balls, and grabbing the fence, I've got a heck of an advantage. I regret now, this sounds stupid, like most of I say, I regret now not starting every fight by just kicking people straight in the balls. First strike,
you know,
kick them straight in the balls. And be like, oh, I get a warning, my bad. The next thing, poke him in the eye. Like, oh, my bad, you know, and I'm winning the fight 30 seconds in with no repercussions. You know,
that's funny you mentioned that, because I went back and I watched the Bo Nickel fight.
Yeah.
Bo Nickel kneed him in the nuts in the first, right in the very beginning, and Keith Peterson didn't see it. And the guy's doubled over in pain, and that's what got him into that situation that ended up costing him the fight. Bo Nickel didn't win that fight legitimately.
I don't know.
If that knee was nonsense, Peterson would not have allowed it, but it apparently, because he's no nonsense Keith Peterson. Every time they say that, I always think there's some nonsense going on right now. Where's Keith at? Like, what's going on?
You know? Dude, he straight up kneed him in the nuts, and the guy was clearly doubled over in pain, and that's what put him into that headlock position. I think that was an illegitimate win.
You think he did it on purpose? What? You think he did it on purpose?
No, he didn't do it on purpose, but he took advantage of the situation. He doesn't get into that position. Keith Peterson should have stopped it and given him a chance to recover. And I feel like he was trying to tell him that when he was on the ground.
Yeah.
He was doing all that talking, and Avelli was going, he fucking need me. And Peter was like, well, too late now. What do you want me to do? Go back in time? Like, you know, but I honestly think Bo Nickel did not receive a legitimate challenge in that fight, and it was a legitimate win. And I don't think we're going to see what he really is made of until he fights somebody. That was a bad win for him and a terrible loss for that Jared guy.
I want him and Shamaya to fight, but that's what, you know, there's guys like John Jones, when there's no repercussions, it's the second time I've said that today, I haven't used that word in 10 years, but when there's not, you can throw your fingers out there, you can throw, you don't have to care, like, there's, what are they going to do? If I need him in the balls, tell me not to, I just need him in the balls, you know what I mean? Like, it's, it should be automatic, and it shouldn't be an automatic disqualification if a guy can't continue either, that should be no contest. I hate that when guys are like, oh, wait, I win if I just say I can't fight, okay, yeah, you know, I do that, but. It,
well, I mean, we had one of those. We had one of those eye pokes in the Fizev Justin Gaethje fight. You know, as much as I love that fight, I mean, he poked him really good in the eye.
Badly, yeah.
And I feel like that affected. I think it affected Fizev more than he wanted to admit, and it affected that the rest of the fight and the rest of that round. I mean,
well, the thing is, dude, when you got balls like that dude does, and Gaethje has, they don't want to show. They don't want the crowd to boo him. So I got booed. I got kneed in the balls twice by Christian Warcraft, my third fight in UFC, drop to my like knees, getting ready to throw up. 10 seconds later, the crowd is booing me that I'm not up fighting. Like, get up and fight, you bum. And I was like, listen, Don Fry, you're just commentating. Hold on. No. they're booing me. And I'm like, and I sat there and got booed for 30 seconds. I said, just start the fight, man. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, I'm not going to sit here and get booed out of the building. I wish I would have flipped the camera off and flipped the crowd off now is what I wish I would have done. I'm full heel, but to like, they start booing me right away. Then I get hit in the back of the head. I look at the ref, like, okay, that's three fouls now that I've been hit with, and you haven't done anything to this guy. And then he choked me unconscious, and I supposedly faked it. Everybody said I faked going out. I was like, okay.
Who's the ref?
He was the nonsense Jeff Peterson. No, he went a lot of nonsense. No, I don't know. It was just some local guy. I was in Seattle, so they didn't have like their typical, you know, just they used the local guy. But it was, I mean, I would have lost anyway. I'm not using that as an excuse, but it was, let me start every fight with kicking somebody in the balls and poking them in the eye and then hit them in the back of the head. And we'll see. Did you just grow a tail? What just happened?
Yeah, what is that? Oh, okay.
When you went to sleep and you woke up, did you know where you were, Sean?
I thought it was between rounds. They said, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. And I thought it was my corner between the rounds. Because the funny thing was he got me in that choke. And I remember thinking that he ain't got shit on this. Like he had me a standing guillotine. And I thought I was fine. Completely thought I was fine. Like I'm just going to rest it out, wait for him to burn his arms out. And next thing I know, I'm waking up. And I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. Like it's over. And as soon as I said what happened, I realized I lost. Because every fight I've ever seen where a guy said what happened, except when it was Steve Mazzagatti when he was reffing. Like what happened? You know, because he's not a good ref. But, well, I was going to use Cecil Peebles as the.
Oh, he was the worst.
The example on that one, but
Justin Gaethje is the most frustrating fighter ever because every time I think, okay, I thought he was going to lose. I thought he had too many punches to the face. I thought he was kind of, and then he beats everyone either ranked the same or below. Like if someone's on his level or below, he'll win. And then you're like, give him a title shot. And then he loses, which I guess he's losing to Charles Oliveira or Khabib. He's not losing to bums. Losing to like some of the greatest guys right. ever. But man, if he would just only fight the way he does against guys that he is ranked higher against these other guys, he'd be like the best in the world. It was,
you know, the thing is that Fizev, any other human in the world gets knocked out in the first round.
Yeah,
I think Gaethje is the only man in the world that could take those punches. And just eat them and keep coming. Like, it was remarkable. His toughness, that was the thing you couldn't quantify going into this fight, is just the pure toughness of Justin Gaethje, the way he survived that storm in the first round and came back and took him apart in the second and third. And even then, I mean, if he hadn't put that much damage on the other side of his face, not the eye poke side, the right side of Fizev's face, you know, I don't know that he necessarily gets that decision, but I think all that damage, you couldn't not give it to him.
So what do you think?
Man, I'll tell you what, I have a, I don't know if you call it respect necessarily, just like Gaethje is, I think he would die. I really think he would die in the cage. Like if given the option between that and losing, like if it's like, hey, you got a 90% chance of dying, but you'll win, I think he would take it. He's like, he really is like a modern day gladiator. I mean, you know, Don Fry is probably one of the toughest guys I've ever seen, just straight toughness. Chris Lytle, a lot of people don't know about him. One of the toughest dudes you ever, like in fights, I mean, would take a beating until he's not tapping, never tapped. There was never submitted, never anything, you know, his whole career just beat by decisions 10 or 20 times, but never tapped, never quit. You know, but Gaethje's on a whole nother. I actually put on a Twitter, I think, or Facebook. I said, like, no one should ever have to follow Gaethje in a main event, like when he's the co-main event, because it's going to be a letdown no matter what. Like, you can't follow that. And I was like, and no one should ever have to be followed by Usman in a main event ever again. Because every time, like, I quit watching, I think after round four, the
The stream I paid for 100% was a little bit dodgy here and there. And I was like, dude, I already know how this ends. He's going to keep trying to take him down, and he's either going to take him down and lay on him, or he's going to lose by decision if he can't take him down. I was like, I already knew what was going to happen. So it's his fights are, I don't know. He's not the same guy anymore, man. And I hope, you know, some guys, you look at Brett Rogers, that's a weird one to put out of nowhere, but he wasn't the same. I was going to make a joke, but I didn't. No, he wasn't the same after he lost. He was competing. I think Fedor beat him first, was the first one ever beat him. He was never the same. And a lot of fighters are undefeated. And I guess technically Usman's not undefeated, but he lost really early in his career, you know. But when you have that first loss, man, it happened to me, it happened to everybody. You realize you can be beaten. You know what I mean? Like,
when you win that many times,
you start believing you'll always find a way to win. Like, you really
Usman's
do start believing.
He's lost before, though. He's lost before. And, you know, I thought maybe he was just one of those guys that can't come back from behind. But I'm like, that's not even true, because Gilbert Burns had him rocked. This other guy had him rocked in the Hader Hassan had him rocked. I was at that fight. So he has come back from behind. I think it might just
be, I think his confidence is gone, man. I think the way he fought, I think he just doesn't believe in himself anymore.
I think his confidence was gone versus Leon Edwards. I think he specifically wanted to beat him up so bad that he
beat him standing, that he just
kept chasing him and walking into counter punches. And in fact, that was the theme of the entire main card, was whoever the aggressor was just getting tagged up left and right. We saw it in the Gaethje fight. We saw it in the Usman fight. We saw it in the Casey O'Neill fight. We saw it in the Dolezé fight. I mean, all of them, whoever was pursuing, lost.
It might just be a style thing, though. I mean, you know, like Matt Hughes, Dennis Hallman. Matt Hughes is 10 times the fighter, I believe, than Dennis Hallman is. But Hallman just beat him. I think he beat him twice in under a minute. Some guys just have your number, and I think that is might be the case, because I want to see Usman in his next fight. I'll tell you, because some guys just have people's number. There are certain guys out there for some
reason.
He
was just trying way too hard. I don't know that he may have his number because he's in his head. That's what it was clear, that Leon Edwards is living rent-free in Kamaru Usman's head.
Like Will Brooks,
to the point where he was fighting totally different than I've ever seen him fight ever. It was fucking weird.
But you look at Will Brooks, Michael
Chandler. Not being a Speedo guy, how about Dennis Hallman?
Yeah, right. Dude, that was...
Remember when he wore that?
I don't know if you remember this, Greg. The guy came out with a Speedo with his ball sack hanging out, right? In a Speedo. And Dana White...
Did his agent tell him?
Yeah. Dana White gave...
He was actually the guy who said no to it originally.
Dana White gave Volkman a bonus for getting him off my TV, for getting him off my screen, just because he submitted him with the Speedo on. I don't even know if he should have even got a bonus. He goes, I'll give this guy $50,000 if he gets to fuck him off. Yeah, that was crazy.
You know, people got fired over that. I don't know if you know that or not. Dana said people that worked for him got fired over letting, because they have to prove whatever you're wearing. They want to make sure that you don't have a sponsor on there that they're not getting a percentage of. So they have to approve your shorts. They approve your walkout shirt. And he said whoever approved those shorts, they're going to be looking for another job. Like he actually said.
Wow.
No, one of the management people, whoever approved for Dennis Hallman to come out, because there's three or four, you never know who's in charge at the UFC. Like, you never know who you're answering to, you know? And, like, they told me what to say in my pre-fight pay-per-view interview. Here I am my whole life. I wait to be in the black and white, like, doing an interview. And the guy's like, why don't you say I'm going to tear an arm off? And I was like, I don't like that idea, man. Try it like this. And he said, we're just doing a sound test. And he only used his lines. He came up. Because I kept saying, I don't want to say that because you could use it then. Well, I just want to get the camera angle. Why don't you say something's happening? I'm going to snap his arm like a chicken wing. I was like, dude, I don't snap chicken wings, and I don't want to say that. Like, they killed my two lines. One was, don't worry about seeing Stefan Struve on Maury Povich anytime soon, because after tonight, he's going to know exactly who his dad is. And I said, you know, Sean McCorkle, you are the father. Like, I said that at the end, you know? So I kept saying he was my son, and they were like, oh, we don't promote other TV shows. And I was like, can we just maybe ask Dana or somebody? I think he'll like that. No. And then I had another one of my kids were excited to have another sibling, because I'm going to make Stefan Struve my son tonight. And he was like, that sounds racist. I'm like, sounds what? Racist? Like, yeah. I said, like, we're both white.
Totally.
And I said,
hey, he's my son.
That sounds like a black-white thing. I was like, you know, he's white, right? Like, he's not even, you know, like, he's not even South African white. Like, he's just white, you know? Like,
dude, he's like fucking 24 pound, 98 brightness fucking white. Like, they sell him his copier paper at Staples.
Yeah, Greg.
The one they used, I think he said, it doesn't matter, spin it up, I'm going home with the W. Like, he made me say that. And I was like, dude, I don't want to say that. Like, that's the word. And he thinks he's real clever. Like, the dude, that dude sucks. Like, I don't remember who his name is, but he tries to tell everybody. He tried to tell Chael. I've watched one time he's telling Chael, and Chael's like, no, I'm good, man, thanks. Like, he wouldn't listen to a word he said. I didn't know you could do that.
So. It happened on Last Comic Standing. I was in the house for a month, and finally they're like, you're all performing. And I was like, yes, fucking finally. Like, this is why I came to be on the show. Cut to, I see it. They're like, you're all performing. They took a shot of me like this. And then they cut to Jeff Dye going, Adam looked like he was really scared to perform. I'm like, these motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, welcome to reality TV. Marvin Vettori, by the way, won that. I lost that fight. I thought Dole's, I don't know how to say his last name, but he...
Dolidze.
I thought Dolidze won. I don't know how they gave it to Vettori.
I thought it could have gone either way. I thought Vettori clearly won round one.
Yeah.
I thought he clearly won, and then the next two rounds could have gone either way. I mean, they were exchanging hard blows. I mean, it really... That's when within they got to the cards. I'm like, is it now, whoever gave him... all three rounds, gave him 30, yeah. 27. I was like, that guy should be fucking fired, okay? Because Dolidze definitely won at least one of those rounds.
I thought he won two out of three.
I thought round two was definitely Dolidze, but the round three, that was the one that I thought could have gone either way. I mean, they both scored weird. Some really great, hard fucking hits, man. It was that,
Greg,
and I-
Greg
and
thought
I
it was like Michael Bisping. You could probably go either way.
What's up, people? I got to talk to you about HelloFresh. First of all, what is HelloFresh? With HelloFresh, you get fresh farmed, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. You got to skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit. Number one, all right? You can make mealtime easy with delicious recipes made with fresh, wholesome ingredients delivered to your door. No lines, no hassle, no gas, all that other stuff that you have to get there. No, just great tasting meals you can whip up and enjoy in the comfort of home. Sounds good to me. HelloFresh has 40 weekly recipes to choose from for all meal occasions, lifestyles, and preferences. Okay, take your pick from meals like soy glazed salmon with rice or mushroom and chive risotto. That sounds delicious. I'm in. Now, me and my wife, we've been doing home-cooked HelloFresh, and it has been delicious, delicious, okay? It saves us time. It saves us money. We're in. So just go to HelloFresh.com/Roasted60. Use the code Roasted60 for 60% off plus free shipping, okay? HelloFresh.com/Roasted60, all right? HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Go check it out. Meanwhile, we'll talk about that for a second. So Jeff Molina, I don't know if you know about this. So Jeff Molina came out as the first bisexual fighter in the UFC. So he's under suspension.
And we wouldn't be MMA roasted if we didn't cover this prominently.
So he's under suspension anyway right now because he's one of James Krause's guys. And they don't even say why he's under suspension. Like, they just say he's suspended indefinitely.
I mean...
So
is
I don't
eating
know.
Ass considered a PED? I don't understand.
So
I love how if you even know if you've ever spoken to James Krause, you're suspended. Like if you like his mailman now cannot order UFC pay-per-views. Like it's like anybody that's
so he's the gambling guy, Krause. Right? The guy that was gambling and they said he might have been fixing fights at James Krause. Not as so he's one of the so anyway. So what happened was a couple months ago, I mean, Molina's great. He's won his last couple fights. Is what he's like. Killing it. He's one of his last like 10 fights. He came out with a gay flag. Oh no, a gay flag on his shorts. Maybe it was on his shorts or there was something gay going on, right? Which was like, you thought, okay, you know, like that's cool. But I guess a video came out last week of him sucking a cock and someone posted it on Twitter. So, why they did that, I have no idea.
Was it happened. One whole cock?
it wasn't one whole cock. So, okay. So then Jeff, to his credit, because I actually wrote something about it. I actually posted on my Instagram. I said, you know, listen, I said, Jeff Molina, nothing but respect for Molina after watching him go down on a guy. He sucked way less than Cyril Gane did in his last performance, right? And then Melina writes, "I fucking hate you," with like dead sign and like crying emoji. He posted that. So he's a really good sport. But he writes, so he wrote like, he writes, "This fuck, well, this sucks. I'm bi," right? Which is or TLDR. I don't know what that stands for. He goes, "Not the way I wanted to do this, but the chance to do it when I was ready has been taken from me. I tried to keep my dating life private, social media. I dated girls my whole life, suppressed feelings I had throughout high school, being on the wrestling team, throughout college, pursuing MMA, even after making the part of UFC. I'm pretty masculine, dude, and pro-y banter and sus sense of humor has always been how I am. The thought of my teammates, people looking up to me, I can't control, something I couldn't fathom." And then he goes on, "I'm dedicated the last 11 years. I don't want to be known as the bi UFC fighter or the gay UFC fighter," right? "To the awful, disturbed person that decided to post this shit, hope it was worth it. At the end of the day, I know my character, morals, who I am as a person. As much as I'm getting hated, shitted on, getting an equal amount of support, that means a fuck ton." And he goes, "And at least I'm not this guy, Ben," and he tagged him, his buddy, right? So, which was like awesome on him, right? So everyone's saying like, "Chris Curtis, you're a real one. You know, Ariel Helwani goes, much love." And then cut to Sean Strickland, right? So we're like,
oh boy.
So what is Sean Strickland? Like, all these people like, "Love you," sending love, respect, keep your chin up, all this shit, right? And then Strickland, right?
Like, "What are you doing Saturday?"
So like, let's see what Sean Strickland writes. So he's not really impressed with this. I don't want to misquote him.
Shocker.
So where is Strickland? He writes, where is Strickland? He basically wrote like, you know, "No one gives a fuck. This is not 2000. Like, the fact that you've been like gambling and fucking this and that, like, you know, get over it. You know, blah, blah. Why is everyone?" First he writes, "You're so brave." You know, like, and then he just goes on about him. So, yeah. So
he was saying that the video was going to come out anyway. So why don't act like you decided to do this? Everybody knew about it already. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Now you're bravely coming out if there's a video of you sucking dick on, you know, online or whatever. But Strickland, man, he has what was it Charlie Murphy said that he was a habitual line stepper? Like, Strickland goes overboard, man, and that's coming from me, which is pretty bad. But he says stuff that's mean-spirited. Like, I always try to, even if it was mean, it was supposed to be funny. You know, I'm not trying to genuinely hurt anybody. But Strickland just says stuff that I can't believe they don't cut it. I can't, like, no, the stuff he says.
He writes, "Jeff Molina suspended indefinitely for rigging fights, ruining MMA. Everyone's like, you're a piece of shit." Jeff Molina writes, "I may have sucked a cock." Everyone writes, "You're so brave. What the actual CNN is going on here? Bro, we don't care that you fuck dudes. In 2023, we care that you're a piece of shit cheater." So, like, well, we don't know that he cheated. We don't know what happened. That hasn't been concluded. So, and you know what, Sean, it is pretty brave of this dude being in the UFC to come out, especially after that video. So that takes a lot of people would have just ran from the situation or not. So I disagree with Sean on that case right here.
No, not me. I'm saying that's what Strickland said.
No, I'm talking about Sean Strickland. Yeah, no, not.
Oh, I thought you were saying me. I was like, don't say what Sean.
You gotta specify with Sean on that one, Adam. You gotta specify with Sean. You know, by the way, TLDR means too long, didn't read. It kind of just means that abbreviated version, then they give you the full version, knowing you're probably not gonna read it all. So
yeah.
That's what that means.
You started with too long about a dick, and I got really confused with what was coming with DR. Like, he put TLDR on his sucking dick video, like too long, didn't. I don't know.
Too long.
Didn't really enjoy it.
Try little dick with an R. I don't know what that R is. But yeah, so I mean, Molina, then he wrote, "I'm available. I'm single. If any ladies or girls want to hang out," like, he, you know, he's doing it the right way, man. It's like when the girl shit herself in the octagon and then she wrote, like, "Shit happens." You know, like, that's the perfect way to deal with this. Is just get out right in front of it or behind it, no pun intended. But yeah, so Molina, I don't know, man.
A little bit of a pun intended there.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole thing, Greg?
I mean, listen, you know, he did what he said. You know, it's better to just, like, your video's out there. Yeah, I'm bi. I think, you know, it's funny. I feel like he was more clarifying that he wasn't just gay than anything. You know, he was like, listen, I admit it. I like dudes too, but I still love to eat that watermelon. So, you know.
Why are you letting anyone take a video of you sucking a dick, though? Like on any, like.
But you're saying that as if he let them. He may not have known it was taken until somebody tried to blackmail him with it. Then he probably didn't go along with it. And then they went and posted it. I mean.
Well, you must be really good at sucking dick if you don't know someone's taping you. Because you must be really into the cock.
I was going to say, listen, I know when a girl has been blowing me, I want her focused.
But you, I don't come
want,
on.
The last thing I want is her looking around like, is anyone watching? Yeah. Although that usually is.
Sometimes she takes breaks. She spits. You know, she does. I mean, she looks at you, you make eye contact. I've never had a girl suck my, I mean, maybe if I think a girl would know if I'm videotaping or blowing me. I mean, it just seems.
Also, it's a different world. These kids, these young people, you know, these 20 somethings, they video everything. Maybe they're just used to it. I don't know.
Yeah. Meanwhile, speaking of getting their dick sucked, Makwan Amerikani, yeah. I said, the guy is great for one round. He wins every first round and then is completely gassed in the second round and loses.
Yeah.
I'm
amazed he's still. How is he still in the UFC? He loses every time. I don't understand how he's still here. No, how he's not in Bellator or PFL or something. I have no idea. Because every
I'm glad I'm not still fighting, because I would swear you guys were talking about me right now, and I hadn't heard it over like the glitch of the computer. Like he gasped after the first round. How is he even in the UFC? I'm like, wait, you guys talking about every different fight, Sean again?
Every fight, you know, he's a great wrestler, but you can't wrestle for 5 minutes every round and scramble for 5 minutes and expect. It's gonna work. Fuck, I'll tell you, it was crazy. You see that one guy, Sam Patterson? So, Sean, I don't know if you saw the undercard. This guy gets knocked out, like knocked out hard, and then he gets up and he starts fighting the ref because he doesn't know where he is, right? And luckily, he was like 125 or something. So the ref is Mark Goddard, who's a big dude. So he didn't have it. Then he starts fighting his whole coaches. He's fighting everybody. Like he gets up and starts going off on the whole, didn't know where the fuck he was until probably three, and they kept going to commercial. Like they would come back and he was still fighting people.
Like, I gotta watch now. I have to go find a bootleg version of that.
Yeah, somewhere. Now I gotta watch that. What's the prelim? So that's actually probably on ESPN Plus.
I might have to re-sign up for ESPN Plus just
fight.
To see that.
It was a quick. It was one round. First, I don't think he shook the guy's hand.
Yeah, a minute and 15 into the first.
It was like he didn't shake the guy's hand.
He's like, T-E-L-F. Like, yeah. Too long, didn't finish the fight. I don't know. I got nothing.
Dude,
too
then,
long, didn't fight.
Dude, then, by the way, I got to say also, I love, he's a friend of mine, Brian Barberena. I love the guy. But I don't like it when a guy loses, which he lost to Gunnar Nelson, and then he raises the guy's hand. Like, the guy just tapped you out, and then you're like, look how good he is.
Yeah, totally. Like, he did it. He's the winner. I admit it. Listen, I admit it. I'm coming out as the loser.
Like, I mean, why should I be more
upset?
Like, I'm sure you're upset you lost, but people should not be more upset than the person who lost. Like, right. It shouldn't appear that way, that I'm more upset for you than you are, because you're smiling in the fucking octagon, raising the guy's hand who just beat you.
Bob Moreno's, but he's another one that like how is he still here? Like he loses every fight. Like it's like how does he? I mean, these guys, they must be tomato cans. You know, they're like
I think he won the one before his last fight, but he took this on short notice. I think that was also it. He took. I think when I think you're.
Listen,
you're,
I was a fan of Bob Marina. I loved it. I was a big fan, and then he keeps losing, and I'm like, I can't support this guy anymore, man.
You can tell the short nose fight because he didn't come in with abs in this one, like he normally does. I'm just joking. You always accept it.
He raised the guy's head. That's like remember the guy who remember when CM Punk, which everyone knew was going to be bad. Like I called his buddy who trains him, and I said, "How's it going to do tomorrow?" The guy who writes back, texts back, not good. Like, his trainer told me this. The guy who trains me this. Then he goes out there. Remember, he throws a fucking wild haymaker against Mickey Gall, who just ducks it, and then submits him in like a minute, right? A minute. It was what a bust. And then CM Punk is going around raising the guy's hand. Like he did something. Wow, this guy's a chip off the old block. Or
he's a true champ. Yeah. Well, Adam left out on that story is that he asked James Krause, he was his coach, and he's the one that told him he wasn't doing good.
So, like, really? You go ahead and
No, you
said his coach said, how's he going to do? Not good. And you were going to be like, how much should I put on it, Krause? Because he's always setting it up.
I got
to
tell you,
who else would he go to, a pro wrestler?
Gunnar Nelson, he's competing with Don Fry for mustache of the year. I'll tell you that.
Mustache. He had a great mustache.
He's got a killer mustache. That mustache won the fight.
And then Veronica Hardy, Dan Hardy's wife.
Yeah, she looked great. What a boy. She looked like a totally different. She looked great.
But the other girl was throwing.
Hey, Dan Hardy's wife fights in the UFC?
Yeah. It was Veronica.
She really does? I didn't know that. I figured she would have been banned along with him. Usually they take that, like, if you do something to UFC, it's like, it's me or your dad, when it was Randy Couture's son, basically. You know what I mean?
He was allowed to corner her, too. He cornered her.
Yeah.
Which is
Hardy was?
Cool.
I thought he was.
And now he's got a new job. He's the head of public relations, fighter relations over at the PFL. Like,
Dan Hardy is?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dan Hardy, by the way, we used to train together. I'm not going to pull the clip because Greg didn't believe me last time. But
hold on real quick. Dan Hardy, the guy to fight with Dana White, is working for the UFC.
Okay. You trained with the guy one time. You make it sound like you guys were training partners.
We did. We trained probably
for the fucking.
We probably trained about 40 times. About 40 times. Yeah, I did.
One time. One
he
time.
Credits me as his coach.
Before your eighth grade New England State Championship.
I fucking
you trained with this guy one time.
You're such a bully. You're the biggest bully. You and
McCorkle. I'm the bully? Yeah, you're the one lying about everything.
I'm not lying. Ask him. He put on the thing. Why would he put on the video, Adam Hunter was my wrestling coach? Why would he say that if I coached him once?
Well, I guess we know why he's out of the UFC.
Oh, yeah, because of me. look, I trained with him wrestling, and he got taken down for 5 rounds straight in 25 minutes. So I'm not saying I was his great coach. So Dan Hardy, by the way.
Adam went on to coach Leon Edwards in wrestling after that. Dan Hardy, the British guy. That's what you guys are talking about.
Yeah,
him and Dana White had a huge.
No, he's working at the PFL. PFL fight, not UFC.
Oh, I thought you said they're working at the UFC's.
Performance training center.
Whatever. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah. So Dan Hardy, by the way. Well, two things. Number one, he told me, by the way, that my first wedding was costing me a fortune. And he told me he had a drive-through wedding with his first wife in Vegas where you don't have to get out of the car. Like, you just basically, you get out and take a picture. It's $25, right? And then I pitched this to my wife and she was like.
Cheaper than an actual drive-through. Like, yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
My wife said that would ruin takeout, right? For her, the rest of her life. But the girl that she fought with was throwing gang punches. Like, she was throwing, the girl that Hardy fought, Greg, was throwing, like, those cholo punches where you wind up.
Yeah, like, wild swings, yeah.
Dude,
She had a lot of Street Fighter in her, that was for sure. At a certain point, she just went to straight street fighting. But, you know, Veronica, it was a tough fight. She did great. I mean, they were smacking the shit out of each other. I really enjoyed that fight, actually, more than I think that was the one I messaged you guys. Like, this fucking first fight is fire. They were scrapping. Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great fight and a great win for the Hardy.
I think they should hire you two guys to get people to watch the preliminaries, because every time I do this podcast, I want to go back and watch what I missed when I don't watch the prelims. Like, it's always something crazy. I'm like, that really happened? I want to see that. I got to see cholo punches between a guy fighting the ref and his team, like the next fight. Like, I got to check it out.
So we have Will Pounder just joined us. Will Pounder is here. What's going on, Will? Hello?
Well, he is driving, so this is definitely never going to have any audio or video issues.
He's using Don Fry's Wi-Fi.
Will Pounder, are you here? Hello?
Well, he's still connecting to audio.
Audio's coming on.
There he is. Now he can probably hear us.
There we go. What's happening?
What's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, not too shabby. You know, live the whole life.
So I was telling everybody how you came to my show and we talked, and you were actually, your story is crazy. You were in the military. You were black belt. You got out of the military. You were in finance. You made all kinds of money. And then you became a porn star named Will Pounder. You won all kinds of awards. And when I saw you in Las Vegas last week, people were paying you $5,000 or don't want to say the number, but a lot of money to fuck their wives in front of them, correct?
They were paying you $5,000. I won't say the number, though.
I could take out the number. I'll take out the number if you want me to. They were paying you a lot of money to bang their wives in front of them, correct?
Yes, but it wasn't in that order of events. It was the Marine Corps. I started the Jiu-Jitsu club in the Marine Corps. And then I broke my back when I got out. Couldn't walk for 2 years. Reverse engineered a video game. Got a job as a change management specialist. Created a job as a project manager at UCSD. Fell into mainstream acting. Lost a bet on a mainstream acting set. Filmed a porno. Thought it was a prank. Then ended up winning a bunch of awards in porn. Thought it was a joke. But yeah, that's kind of how it happened.
What was the porno you thought was a prank?
So when I was filming this military TV show, it was a bunch of military, a bunch of vets. And so I was pranking everybody. Like, I don't like to be entertained. So if I'm on set for 16 hours not doing anything, I'll find ways to have fun. And so I did. And, you know, as each week went by filming this movie, the pranks kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I thought they were going to get me back. And so I thought this whole porn thing, I thought it was a joke. I mean, come on. Like, who loses a bet and ends up as a porn star? Like, I thought it was a fucking joke. Yeah. So I go to the shoot, and they're shooting me, and like the every single scene and every single take, he's like, oh, he's a natural. Oh, you're good. They're just blowing smoke up my fucking ass, you know? And so
that's literally.
So I thought it was a joke. And so, you know, because like you shoot mainstream, you'll shoot the same scene like 30 fucking times. And so here we are, and it's like one shot. Oh, you're one hit wonder. Oh, you're natural. Da da da. Like this whole thing, this whole episode of my first porno, I was like, oh, okay. And then it comes down for where she's going to like whip my dick out. And I'm like, all right, well, if I was the guys and I was pranking myself, I would probably run out and point and laugh when the dick comes out, you know? So I think in my head, I was like, all right, I got to get in the mood so he's not just some little willy that pops out, you know, because you know, I'll never live that one down with these guys. So, like, I'm all getting in the mood, and so I'm like, all right, ready. So she goes to whip it out. I'm looking around, like, left and right, like I'm waiting. Then she puts it in her mouth, and I stop for a second, and I kind of look around, and nobody comes running out. I was like, oh, I guess shit, this is a porno. So I was like, well, fuck it, we're already here, might as well do it. So that's kind of how that happened.
I've been paid to leave porno sets. It's not quite the same. They were like, can you put that away and just leave? And I'm like, okay.
So you won an award for that porno?
It wasn't that one, but I ended up winning awards every single year since I've been in. That one did really, really well on Pornhub. It just kind of skyrocketed the career.
Well, at least we know how Jeff Molina got his video film the other night. It was a prank.
By the way, you're with Sean McCorkle, ex-UFC star who submitted Mark Hunt to 59 seconds. And one of the funniest people I know, Greg Romero Wilson. So, and then obviously with AVN, a winner. Now, you just shot a scene last week with Stormy Daniels, right?
Yeah, it was for her production, which was very interesting because that was the first time I've ever had to deal with Donald Trump interrupting anything in my life, like physically.
Well,
I never thought in a million years that I would actually have to have my production or anything that I do in a day-to-day life interrupted by the actual motherfucking Donald Trump.
Oh, please tell us this story.
Wait, what? What? He came out to the set?
No. So what happened was. You know, like Stormy Daniels was all over the news lately with all that stuff that went on, like, you know, like 7 years ago or whatever. And so she needed to go, like, testify or something like that. And so this was in the middle of this production. So on the last day, we were all pulling in, like, 16-hour days. I think I slept 4 hours at night for, like, the whole week I was there just because we were trying to cram in as much as we could because we don't know what the last day is going to look like because of Trump. And so sure enough, she's got to go in and testify. And so like our whole day gets shot. It's the last day of filming out there where we're located. I don't want to put that out there yet because that's her business.
Right.
But so when that happened, I had like 3 hours to kill at the airport. And so one of my co-stars, he's like, yo, there's a river like 20 minutes away. So we borrowed a car, took a bunch of mushrooms, and went down onto a river. And they fucking, and I was sitting there like, oh, this is, sun is shining. None of this raining shit that's going on down here. Sun is shining. I thought my shrooms are kicking in. I'm in a fucking kayak on a river. I just like, they started swimming, they're yelling at me like, yo, you coming? I was like, you guys go ahead. I'm going to take a nap. So I knocked out on the fucker on the river and just fucking drifted until I hit a tree. Then I woke up. I was thinking in my head, I was like, I'm not going to paddle my ass back up this fucking river while I'm on mushrooms. I don't know what they were thinking. They were on mushrooms and they're all like gung-ho. And they get back and they're like, yeah, we kind of wish we wouldn't have paddled. Yeah. Yeah. So that was the trip. Like, Donald Trump interrupted the production day. Which, wow. Because of that, I got to float down a river on mushrooms.
Well,
so that was,
you know, that's also you guys' partially your fault for shooting at Mar-a-Lago. So maybe...
We weren't shooting at Mar-a-Lago.
I know, and you're like, honestly, I don't want to give away the location.
So what was the movie, though? It was you and Stormy were the stars of the movie?
No, she's the director of the movie. She directs now.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
You know, I was a little surprised to find out that Will was a star. I thought he's more of a character actor in the porn. Like, I thought he more really engrossed in the role. I don't know. That was a terrible joke.
So now you told me you do about, because I asked you, I said, so, because I remember these husbands were hiring you to bang their wives. And I said, well, what if you get paid by the hour? Like, what if you finish in like 3 minutes?
Yeah. And also, do you get that like on Indeed.com or?
So you know,
they end up, they usually end up DMing me on social media or sending me an email. And I thought of when I first one, I haven't done this yet, but it's been very tempting. Well, actually, I did do it that one time. Right before your show. But, you know, anyhow, aside from that, I thought it was entertaining. I thought this was a crock of shit. But then next thing I know, it's like they like it. And so I was like, all right. So every time this couple comes into town, they pay me a bunch of money and I go bang his wife while he watches.
Now, you said that you make them have a AIDS test, right? HIV test or a herpes test?
I make them get a full panel. They get a full panel test. The same test that I have to get for work, I make them get.
Right. Now, nice. But I said, now, what if you're like 3 minutes or 4 minutes? You just show up, bang them, and leave. You get paid by the hour. But then you said, listen, I shoot like four scenes a day. So you just go until she comes, right?
Well, the way I look at it is, if I enjoy that, or like with that person or whatever, with that experience, then I wanted to get paid to do it again.
Right.
So I'm gonna do a good job. It's like, if you're doing a job that you don't like, suck at that job and nobody will hire you to do it again.
Yeah, if I'm being paid to fuck somebody's wife, it's because they're about to get a divorce. and he's decided, you know what, go in there and punish her with it. Make her regret every decision.
You know, I would have, when I was in the UFC, I would have that proposed to me all the time. I never got offered any money for it, but I have it proposed to me all the time. And I always assumed it was a setup to be robbed. Like, I always thought somebody was trying to set me up to rob me or something. And so I would usually react very negatively to that. And I'd be like, yeah, you guys think you're going to set me up and rob me. And then they would act weird about it. But I didn't know that world existed until I got in the UFC, that people would want to do that.
Like, all right. So check this out. Like, so there's this like social line of like how people operate. And then the day that I became a porn star, oh, for whatever reason, I can't tell you what it was, but now I appeared on the other side of this line. And everything has been the exact opposite. And people, like, so when I like start talking to people and they found out I'm a porn star, all of a sudden they want to talk about all their sexual shit. For no fucking, like, even people that I lived with, I had some roommates in Southern California that I was living with when I got into the industry, and that shit got fucking weird. Like, I'm talking like some like what the fuck? Like, you don't just tell somebody that, you know? Mm-hmm. Like for example, one of the persons, like, once he found out I was a porn star, actually, yeah, he kept wanting me to bang his girlfriend, but I wasn't really into his girlfriend. I just really wasn't into his girlfriend. But he wanted me to bang her, and I was like, "You don't shit in your own backyard, you know." So I was about to do that, and then the other one, he turned out years later, he told me, "You probably already know this, but I'm bi, you know. So if you wanted to work together or shoot some content," I was like, "Oh, I appreciate your honesty, man, but I'm good."
Like, I'm good. Just don't drink all my orange juice in the fridge, okay? That's it.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Maria.
I think the weirdest one.
Yeah.
The weirdest one out of all this. And to this day, this one is still probably the weirdest thing I've ever actually encountered being across this fictitious fucking line. So they had this friend. There's this chick. And so I'm in the house. I'm trying to go to bed. And she's following me everywhere. She wouldn't shut up. And she's emotionally distressed because she just went through a breakup. And so she finally tells me about her breakup. And she figures that it's okay to tell me because I'm a porn star. And so I know that is why. That is the justification for telling me this story. So she goes on to tell me about how lucky that she was to experience dating her stepbrother.
Oh, God.
And that I make movies about that, but she got to live it. And I'm sitting here like,
oh, no.
My gosh, what the fuck did I get myself into right now? Yeah, so that was an experience.
That's terrible.
I like how they can blame their life decisions. Like, you inspired me. Like, hey, hold on.
I was like,
not put this on me.
First of all, I know how the whole step stuff actually got started. It wasn't by some fucking cabal conspiracy fucking shit going on there. What happened was, I literally actually talked to the directors who actually were the ones that filmed this shit when it first started. It all started because they were running out of ideas to shoot on a set one day, and one of them just said, fuck it, just fuck a stepbrother. And they're like, I mean, that's not against the law, is it? They're not blood related. Yeah, sure, fuck it, whatever. So they threw it out there, and that's just what they did the film. And then it broke the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And so it wasn't that there was some secret organization or thing that was actually trying to build this whole genre up. It was literally all these fucking people that wanted to watch it. And it literally, that's what broke it. So they kept shooting those and they kept outperforming every other scene.
But you were telling me,
it seems like all they make are those fucking stepbrother, stepdad, step scenes. I know. And I'm like, is this the only thing they make now? Because it does nothing for me. But
Well, there's something else to consider as well. So porn goes to the entire world. And so they're basing it off the analytics on how it performs on the hub. And so when you're looking at the hub, the majority of those viewers are actually in other countries.
Oh, God.
So the trending topics that are typically happening on these hub pages and stuff like that aren't even all the American viewpoints. It's not what the Americans want. It's what most of the other world wants. And I've noticed that there's different niches around the world. Like any of my fans from India, they're really big into armpits.
Like armpits?
Armpits is like their thing.
Why? Really? Why? But how do they?
I think it has something to do with their cuisine. There's a similarity.
I think Will is trying to pull us across that imaginary line. Is what he's trying to do right now.
I'm giving you a little bit of insight into my world.
But they want you to they want you to bang someone's armpits.
No, it's like for example, I got paid like $500 to make a video where I'm sniffing and licking my armpit.
Your own armpit.
My own armpit. Just nothing fancy. Just like.
And here I've been doing it for free.
Right, I was gonna say.
I'm so mad. I've left so much money on the table. I had no idea.
No, but Will, you also told me that like the reason there's like five male porn stars is someone made a movie right one time, right, where they had a tryout and 100 guys tried to become porn stars and no one succeeded.
It's got a 99% fail rate. Here's the whole story, and you actually know him. You know Dave.
Yeah.
He was the cameraman for this. So the producer comes up to him, and he's like, "We want to find the next big male porn star." And so he's like, "It's not going to happen." And so he insists it's not going to happen. So, no, we're gonna search, we're gonna audition, we're gonna do this. And he's very insistent it's not going to happen. He's like, "Look, every 4 years you get one good guy. Every 9 years you get one really great guy. Outside of that, I've never seen anything different in the whole time he's been in." So they're like, "Okay." So he's like, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll film it if you pay me up front." So they said deal. So they auditioned. I think they read like over 3,000 submissions for it, narrowed all the way down to like 300 applicants for it. So they brought these, the, the top of the line out of all those applicants that they thought would actually be able to do it. They brought them in into a set. Now, the set that they brought them into, the girl was fucking smoking hot. She was inviting. She was really nice. She wasn't how a lot of girls are when no one knows who you are. Like, if you're nobody, you're not going to work with any big name girls. You're going to work with, you know, like your B and C list studios that are just trying to ball on a budget, basically. So it's not really the greatest experience, and nobody wants to be there. But in this girl, she wanted to be there in the video. You could clearly see that. And so out of the 300 guys that came in through there.
What? This is like,
it's going to come back. He just hit a dead spot. He'll be back.
Oh, man. What do you think?
Wait, I think he's back. So, he's back.
Okay.
All right.
So the 300 guys.
Yeah. Out of 300 guys, how many do you think actually got hard?
Seven? At least a dozen.
Okay, we got a dozen. Any other guesses?
I say zero.
Seven.
Okay, zero. Seven. Four.
Four
got hard. And then guess how many stayed hard after the camera came out?
Zero.
Now, guess how many got hard again after the camera came out?
Me.
Zero?
1.5.
One guy got really? So they found the guy.
1.5. No. 1.5 got it hard again. The 0.5, he came with a limp dick on his way to get hard.
Oh my God.
The one guy got it hard, and then by the time the camera came out again, lost it and couldn't get it back. So out of 3,000 applications, 300 auditions, zero actually penetrated the porn star.
Oh, my God.
Holy fuck.
And that ever happened to you?
No.
You get hard every single time?
Yeah. I've never failed a scene, and now, I shoot multiple scenes a day.
Do you use any medical enhancements, you know, the Viagras or anything, or herbal supplements? Nothing? Just straight will pounder. And how big is your Johnson? How big is it? Like lengthwise, girthwise?
Oh, come on.
You know, he's just a little guy. You don't
You don't make money with the little guy. No way. You got to be able to. What, you got nine? You got a niner? You posting a niner? What you got?
You don't got to reach the end of the tunnel. You just got to beat the shit out of the walls.
I am putting that on a t-shirt. I'm going to wear that everywhere.
Wow. All right. So back to MMA. So are you still a black belt?
So I technically don't even have a belt.
Do you think he lost his black, like he got demoted?
So here's the story. So I did Nogi with, I started with Barrett Yoshida, started the jiu-jitsu club in the Marine Corps. Then I went professional in Nogi and started teaching the armoring grappling team. And I was competing in advanced and pro divisions in my first year of doing the sport. And so I just skipped all the belts, and I would just go train with all the pros, and I would go teach seminars and go coach and all this kind of stuff. And I never actually went through the belt process.
Yeah.
Ghazi Parman gave me a blue belt to go teach a seminar in a gi. And I told her, I was like, I don't really want a belt because it does. I already got belts that hold up my pants, and it doesn't make me any better. Like my first year, I was submitting black belts in competitions. My first pro fight in the sport was about, like, I think it was like 18 seconds.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's what it's, man, the whole belt thing. He's right. The no gi, they won't give you really what it is they want to be able to teach you jiu-jitsu for 25 years, and without gi tricks, they can't do that. You know what I mean? Like they can't do that. But that stuff, that whole belt thing, people used to ask me what my belt was. I said, with the gi, a white belt. Without one, maybe purple belt. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it just depends on what you want to do. But the whole belt thing is just a scam they came up with, man, to
So I got a photographic memory, and I learned ridiculously quick. I could watch a video and turn around and go and apply it. And I've done that in some fights before. I watched a YouTube video on X-Guard, and then I ran out there and ran a whole X-Guard series of sweeps and into the submissions. Like, that's just how my brain works. And so I never like stayed at one place long enough, because my rule of thumb is if I can stalemate or beat my coach, then I need to go to some place that I'm getting my ass kicked so I can keep upping my game.
That's right. True.
So within the first 2 years, I went through like three different schools, and I ended up training with right when I got out of the military, I was training with Andre Gabau. He was coming in and teaching over at the Black House for the pro team.
Wow.
And so he changed my game a lot, because I was overly technical. And because most of the guys, the competition in the sport, once you get into it, it's like very, very technical. And then Andre Gabau, when he came in, he just went to fucking Smashville. And it was like he smashed out most of my technique. And so I had to relearn how to do against an insane amount of pressure, and then incorporate the technique that actually works under that kind of pressure. And then that version of the game was way more successful than the game that I had initially.
Well, you know what's funny is most guys are full of shit about having a black belt. Just hearing him talk, he's 100% trained a lot and knows what he's talking about. It's I actually submitted both teachers, both places I went my first week of jiu-jitsu, but I outweighed them by 175 pounds. So it wasn't that impressive. But no, it is true, man. That's a whole nother world when guys – I'll tell you what's confusing. I'm sure he knows. When guys don't do everything by the book, it gets really – it can mess with you sometimes, because you expect them to go, you know what I mean, half guard, side control, knee on belly. And when they do something weird that you're not expecting like that, it can really throw you off, man, like really throw
that's my whole game. My whole game is counterintuitive. It's – I run a – are you familiar with Barrett Yoshida?
I know the Yoshida name, but I may not be thinking of the same guy.
So he runs, he's the one I learned it from. He never taught it to me, but he submitted everybody with it. And I was like, well, statistically, that move is outperforming everything I'm doing. So I'm gonna learn that one.
Right.
And so I spent a whole year and only used a crucifix. And I've had the highest success rate running the crucifix choke series from there. That game is, I even talked to Gordon Ryan about this, and because I thought I might, like, because I was training with Gordon Ryan after one of his seminars, and I was saying, well, I think this one actually has an advantage. And he's like, actually, I started training with this. This is the first series I've ever learned. And he's like, my coach was insistent on it. And I was like, well, that explains a whole lot, because when I introduce the baseline of that game into the sport, it shakes everyone out. Because if you touch a leg, you're in a crucifix. And if I catch head control and you reach your hand up to defend it, you're in a crucifix. And like, there's so many. It's the most easily accessible game outside the leg lock game, and even within the leg lock game, if you don't play the leg locks right, you open yourself up into a crucifix series.
What's next for Will Pounder?
Well, I'm headed back out to Vegas yet again, and I've decided I'm going to take a week off just because I've been doing nothing but back to back movies, and I haven't even slept two nights in my home in months. So I'm going to head back and take a little vacation. And then it looks like I might be moving back to California in June. But I do launch my VIP page, my content and stuff like that, the beginning of next month. So if you actually want to know where like the adult industry is headed, I would strongly recommend focusing on self-generated content versus doing mainstream. Treat mainstream adult as marketing and then build your own stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Right.
Will, I would just like to say before you leave, as an American and an avid porn viewer, thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you.
I was waiting. I knew Greg was going to work in thank you for your service at some point. I was waiting for it. I knew it.
Thank you, Will.
Well, to any of the ladies that are watching this, thank you for your cervix.
All right. That was Will Pounder. Ashley Gambino, how are you?
I'm doing as good as I can, I guess.
I am so sorry about what happened with your kid. I don't even know where to start. How's your husband? How's Trap? What's going on?
Well, I mean, he's been holding us together. I don't really know what to say, man. We've been through so much in the last couple of months that, like, if I even start to explain it, I tear up. It's like this movie you just can't even script. It's insane. Here's my heart catheter, by the way. This thing is in my chest for I don't know how long, probably for good. I have a incurable rare heart and lung disease called hypertension, pulmonary hypertension. Mine is actually severe pulmonary hypertension. It's the later stages. Well, anyways, the pressure in my lungs when it was found was 5 times the amount that it should have been. And as a result, the right side of my heart is now twice the size that it should be because it was trying to make up for that pressure and pump the blood. This is something that's been brewing for years, but it's so rare that it just hasn't been diagnosed. Now that I know about it, I think I was lucky to make it through Carmine's birth because that's when they found that my oxygen was dropping whenever I would lay down. Do any type of activity, my oxygen would drop if I just walked to his crib right after he was born. To an extent, it had kind of balanced out, but I was still having somewhat oxygen problems. And then it got way worse when I was pregnant with our last baby. And that's when they found it, when we were randomly in Ohio by the specialty doctors, the few and far between specialty doctors that there are for pulmonary hypertension.
Well, I don't know what to say. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're going through this.
You know, it's amazing, Adam, not to, to jump in, but my daughter had to have open heart surgery. She had a hole in her heart when she was 5, and we didn't know. Like, had no idea. And the guy that found it wasn't even a heart doctor. He found it by accident, like checking something else. He was a really good other kind of doctor. And she had some weird, she was a neurologist, and she was twitching her eye a lot. We just wanted to make sure it was just a habit, not something wrong with her neurologically. And he was like, "Do you have you got her heart looked at? She has a murmur." And we're like, "Oh no, we know. They said it's fine." He goes, "It's not fine." He said, "There's something wrong, you know, or whatever." And it turned out we took it to a real doctor because doctors in Indiana suck, but really nationwide they're the worst, man. They don't care. It's not their kid. It's not their wife. They don't do anything. But yeah, most people I know that find out something like that, like she said, was never diagnosed. Could have been diagnosed if they cared or if they took the time. But they're just trying to get you in and out and out of there as quick as possible. And any doctor, cardiologist that would have looked at her test probably would have known. If, you know what I mean, if they cared enough to look, you know, it's sad, really. They, my daughter could have died from it. They said it was already stressing her lungs at 5 years old. We would have never known if she wasn't twitching her eye, and she would have died, they said, before she was 13 years old. They said that we would have never known in her, like, it was already showing stress. None of her pediatrician didn't notice anything. No, oh, it's a heart murmur. It'll go away. You know, they don't, but if it was their kid, I bet they would go for follow-up tests, you know, or whatever they would order. But when it's you or yours, they don't. Doctors are the worst, I think, so.
So, a lot of them are. I agree with you, and I'm so sorry that you went through that. I have to admit, like, I have had a really bad opinion about doctors most of my life, but I will admit that the doctors at the Cleveland Clinic main campus, they did save my life in a moment where I really needed them to. I was like a hiccup away from death, literally. I might have had a week or two left. And so sometimes they do know what they're doing and know what they're saying, but you got to find the right ones. That's all.
Right. Well, you have to go to the Cleveland Clinic. I'm going to Mayo Clinic here next month because I'm tired of these.
Mayo's good too.
Cities, Mayo's, you know, and it just clinic. When I went to a doctor in Germany, and my mind was blown. When you're dealing with somebody that's really, really good versus somebody that just wanted to be a doctor and went to med school, you know, or whatever. But it's it was between the Cleveland Clinic and the Mayo Clinic, and the Mayo Clinic is actually better as far as what they take on my insurance. And when you're dealing with things that might be hundreds of thousands of dollars, like I got to have back surgeries and stuff, like it does make a difference. But it's, the Cleveland Clinic's awesome. I've heard that they are, that's where the best doctors go. They're in the Mayo Clinic and places like that. They don't go to your local hospital, you know, and be an ER doctor. So,
the nurse I trusted the most also suggested Mayo. So they're very, very good. Yeah.
So Ashley, I was trying to like explain you guys before the show. So I go, you guys came to my show. You're very nice. I am a big fan of you and your husband. But every time you guys came on the show, I would get hate mail from people that were like, why are you getting these people on the show? They're the fucking biggest, they blah, blah, blah. And then like your husband is like this 400-pound guy who's always starting shit with people online. And I'm entertained by him because he's funny. But it's
to be fair, he's usually just finishing it.
Right. You're starting shit with people. But I feel like you actually like not that he's bad, but he has a lot of work to do. Yeah, he's getting better at fighting. You were on Fremont Street boxing people when you were pregnant.
Not while I was pregnant. That is a misconception. I was only taking pictures while I was pregnant, promoting Fit Pregnancy at the time. Okay. But I did have a lot of fun on Fremont, and I handled myself so very well. And I really, really, that place will always hold a special place in my heart.
So, I mean, what, now you go down to Fremont.
Come talk to Fremont, I'm sorry, is that in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Yes. It's like the OG strip of Las Vegas.
Right. Okay. I was making sure. I knew I'd heard it, but I wasn't positive where we're talking about here.
Now, there's videos of you. So what would you do? You would take your boxing gloves down, and then you would charge people to fight you on the strip or on Fremont?
Well, there was rules, and I would tell everybody the rules, and you know, it would turn real more often than not. And every once in a great while, if I was working with an actual fighter who knew how to be constructive, I would let it be a little bit live and have fun. But here's the thing, like the rules were, we're not going to actually try and hit each other. I would hand a pair of boxing gloves to a willing participant that wasn't completely belligerently drunk.
Yeah.
And what we would do is play fight each other. The goal was to shadow box each other. And, you know, if they accidentally hit me, then fine. I'm not going to be mad at that. But then if they're purposely hitting me after they said they understood the rules, I'm going to hit them back and let them know that just because I'm not doesn't mean I can't. And I'm going to make them stop. And that happened a lot.
And then there's a video. I talked about the Dr. Phil thing where Trap went on Dr. Phil and Dr. Phil said, you're not going to be a fighter. What are you doing? But you guys were set up or something and you wanted to expose Dr. Phil. Like what happened there?
No, we didn't. It's not like we want to expose Dr. Phil. The guy himself was actually really nice. We had about an hour and a half long conversation on the show that they cut into maybe a half hour.
Right.
You know, the producers are snakes, but I guess they kind of are in all TV. What are you going to do? And there's, you know, a lot of the answers that we gave were misplaced in the editing, and most people don't understand that, and they're very gullible. So that's right. What TV's for.
And then it's like he's a rapper, right? Because there were videos of him on like the desert with like five black women in a limo, and he's drinking champagne and like what? You got to
yes, he shot. Is.
Sean, you got to meet this guy. I feel like you would get.
I was trying to look it up. I've seen his face. I do recognize him. So I've seen him on, I don't know what, but I was looking on my phone. I've seen him on something, but I don't know.
The Underground. He got like 100 people mad at him on the Underground. People want, like,
that's my life story.
But but I've never seen a guy have people like showing up to his gym. Like they were showing up to fight him. With video.
Oh, yeah. This one time he went to U-Haul, when we were living in Las Vegas, and he went to Utah to train. And this other guy drove like maybe 2 or something hours to get to that gym because he knew he was going there originally as a hater wanting to fight him, and then realizing, oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't fight this guy, and respecting him by the time he left. And now they're on good terms.
Oh, good. So what's, but then Trap posted he's starting a cult. Is he starting? What was that about?
I know, you kind of have to talk to him about that one.
It sounds like he's trolling the hell out of a lot of people, especially on the Underground. It's so funny, man. When I used to be the Underground legend, like hero, that's how I actually got a UFC contract, by talking trash on the Underground. Like, that's how they got to know me, is because I would claim someone set up a fake account for me and started saying that I was claiming all these things that weren't true. And so I just went with it. Like, I was like, I took over the account and just kept saying it. I was like, look how much attention I'm getting. And then they started doing that. But yeah, I would get people so mad, and people are like, don't you hate it when you lose a fight and the whole Underground turns against you? I was like, no, I went to an Underground party one time. If you would have seen the people that post on the Underground, I'm not really worried about what those people think about or whatever they are. It is an odd collection of people, to say the least, the Underground people. So like most of them, it was like emo people who look like serial killers, who look like they did live in their mom's basement, you know? So like, they're like, that guy doesn't think my stand-up's very good. Well, I'll probably be all right. You know, like, I don't know that he's actually the expert, but the Underground is a scary place. Those people on there, man, they are.
What happened? Someone, and then you guys raised money for a funeral, and then someone stole the money.
Here's what happened. A certain family member of his had started a GoFundMe not even 24 hours after Tana passed away. And I wasn't asked permission for that to be started or anything like that. I found out about it by randomly seeing it online, actually. And so that money was promised to us when we made it to Ohio, because we decided to bury her there, as where most of our family's at. And you can just bury somebody once in Ohio. I don't know if you know this, but in the desert, you have to continue to rebury them. So that's also something you have to consider.
Wait, what?
Because of the ground. Yeah, it's crazy situation. But anyways, that's off subject. So we got to Ohio and it's time to plan her funeral. And I called the guy and I say, can you please give us the money that's been raised so that we can plan our daughter's funeral? And he told me no. He said, no, I'm not going to give it to you. And I started trying to nice him to death because right now I'm desperate. My daughter's passed away and he has her funeral money. And he just wasn't having it. It wasn't working, you know, and he just ended up, the last things that he said to me was he was yelling at me over the phone and said, it's not about your daughter. And he hung up the phone. And that's the last time I spoke to him. Now,
so since then, is there like a, how can we help? Is there any way we can help?
Well, GoFundMe's got to be able to take the money back, right? That can't be right. Like, you can't just raise money and not give it to the person. Like, isn't there some kind of...
And trying to work with law enforcement and with GoFundMe. And here's the thing. They're also against me. I was being misled by the Worcester Police Department because they're, and they have, they're friends with the guy that stole the money. And they assigned me to a certain police officer that is also friends with him, like very close friends. And he refused to file the case. And I then at that point was a little nervous to continue pursuit while I was within their jurisdiction. So now I filed federally and I will go ahead and continue to pursue that situation. But at this point, there's nothing I can do. But I'm still working on it. Right now, I have to gather myself now that I'm home and get myself together. And then I'll get all those things taken care of. But what we've done in the meantime is we have started our own GoFundMe that is on both mine and my husband's page. They're pinned at the top and we still have to raise money for our daughter's headstone. We don't have the money for that. So that's a lot of what the GoFundMe is for. And then to help with just a little bit of living costs and stuff because of, I mean, I just 1 month's supply of my medicine for this pump that is attached to me for the rest of my life is 2 huge boxes of medicine and it's expensive and it's, I have to mix it every 48 hours. I just mixed it last night. So you have to be very sterile and clean with the process because the line is going directly into your heart. So it's something else. It's just a lot to handle. And so if anybody wanted to share our GoFundMe or donate to it, we would be extremely grateful for that. I have a headstone picked out. We just need to be able to pay for it.
Man, I don't know how to say this, make this funny. I'm sorry, Ashley. I'm sorry you got to.
There is no funny, right? Like, I don't even know what to say either.
Holy fuck. I was going to, I don't know. Sean, you got anything? You want to help?
Yeah, did I? Yeah, no, it's. I was going to say, I don't really have any jokes on that. I've usually got jokes, but.
I'm sorry. Last time you came on, you and Jenny Savage went at it and had a rank out contest. That was probably one of the funniest episodes we ever had.
That was funny. The one with Miss Star was funny too. That one was fun.
Now what happened with Trapp? Because Trapp did fight in Florida, right? You got to see this fight, Sean.
Yeah. So
he doesn't throw a punch for 3 rounds, for 3 minutes. But then he throws a punch. And somehow he misses, but knocks the guy down. Like, he barely hit him, and he gets on top and he starts beating the shit out of this guy.
Hit him hard. Trapp can hit hard.
But then he gets up, and his leg gives out. Like, what happened there?
Well, see, a lot of things you guys don't know. Like, for example, his knee, that is a pre-existing injury. When we first got to Las Vegas, it got injured in that random competition that he joined in last minute. But he didn't tell anybody about it. And it's been bothering him ever since. And so when he landed really hard on it, with my education on knees, I believe that his meniscus is messed up and it jammed it somehow.
Now the guy said Trapp offered him money to lose the night before. Is that true?
No, that guy was getting trolled by the trolls, and he's just not smart enough to know that.
Okay, so Trap didn't try.
Like someone from the underground wasn't smart enough to know they're being trolled. I find that unbelievable.
No, I'm saying the opponent. He's just not smart enough. He's not. You know, he's not the full box of crayons. You know.
Yeah. Right. Now, why does Trap get? Why does he keep getting thrown out of gyms? Because he keeps going to gyms, and then he posts like, "I'm on my journey, greatest gym ever." And 3 days later, it's a different gym. Like, what's going on?
Well, I mean, I went to a lot of different gyms myself while I was training. And personally, I like that look at training because you get to see it from all kinds of different angles and develop your own style.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's part of what made me as good as I was. And man, if I ever get a chance to get a random cure for this and they say I'm allowed to compete again, I am taking my world title with no questions asked.
So Ashley, like I knew this, I was not looking forward to this interview because I know how hard you've been going through, and I know this podcast is usually ridiculous. So I'm like, how am I going to make this? So it is funnier with your husband because he's such a character, dude. You got to see this guy, Sean. He walks around wearing a matching like Giorgio Armani, whatever, with gold chains, sunglasses, and a fucking big thing that says Trap, and then. He just goes around pissing everybody off. But you meet them.
So is he the actual Trap Gambino, the rapper that I've heard about? I've heard that name. So is
he? No. And I think his name is like Will Stevens or something, right? It's not even like his name. Yeah. But
I mean, is that what's his rap name?
Well, yeah, what's his rap name?
Everybody knows him by Trap Gambino. He's Trap
That's
Gambino.
What I'm saying. I've heard of Trap Gambino before. I just didn't know if it's the same one or if he's trolling.
Yeah.
Or
he's a super heavyweight, and he has actually had that nickname Trap since he was a baby. A lot of people misunderstand that. Trap's been his nickname for a very long time. So that is his name.
I like him. I like you, and I'm sorry you're going through this shit. And I'll post out the links and all this stuff.
Thank you.
And Ashley, hang in there. I don't know what to say. Honestly, just hang in there, and I'm sorry you're going through this.
Well, I'm trying super hard to be Iron Woman right now. You know, I have put myself in front of all these fans, and I don't want to just disappear. But I don't know if you noticed, but even having my conversation with you guys, I've gotten a little out of breath. This pulmonary hypertension is no joke. So I just hope that everybody understands. I'm really trying to put it out there for everybody to understand that no matter what, my message has always been to want to inspire people. And so I can't quit doing that now. I'm going to continue doing what I want to do and just find another way to do it.
Well, hang in there. All right.
Thank you.
Take care, Ashley. Be good.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. That was Ashley. All right. I don't even know what.
Yeah, Lee, that was rough. I thought she was joking at first when she started. I thought it was going to be like this. I thought, because you made him sound crazy. I thought, like, what's this? And then I didn't know what the tragedy was. Like, I looked it up while we were on there. I was like, oh, their daughter died. Their 3-year-old daughter. That is from leukemia, no less. You know, this is, I don't know if you put this on her, Adam, but this is the truth. I didn't want to say it to her, but, like, sometimes when your whole life is falling apart, it's better to get it all done at once. Like, as crazy as that sounds, like, it's you can only suffer so much. So when your daughter dies and you find out you're dying or have, you know, some disease or whatever, how would you like to have your daughter die, start to get over it a few years later, and then you find out you've got, you know what I mean? Like, it just, so when my whole life fell apart, I just kept getting kicked while I was down. I was like, you know what, better now than spread out. You know what I mean? I can't be any sadder than I am right now. You know what I mean? So like yeah, that was rough, man. She broke my heart. Like, I don't know how that's legal. Maybe there's more of the story, but I don't know how you can do a GoFundMe and keep the money. I don't, that's got to be some kind of major criminal charge. Like, I don't know. So,
well, listen, Sean, I hope you have a great week. I freaking,
all right, man.
I'll talk to you soon.
On that note, see you, buddy.